What's up, Michael Dean? How you doing?
I'm eating a sandwich.
Michael's eating a sandwich. And you're free to do that, because this is Freedom Fiends Live. You're also free to call in. Give us a call at 307-215-5171. Once again, that's 307-215-5171. Yeah. And we're getting pretty popular, so if you want to email instead of calling in, you can email us at talkback@freedomfiends.com. So
we have a money back guarantee if you don't like me eating a sandwich on the air.
Yeah, then you get your free money back. That's how good we are to our customers.
Speaking of real money, talk about the dime cards, Nima Vedati.
Talk about them? Okay, I'll talk about the dime cards. For those who don't know, we've got these awesome silver dime cards. We have a Guns and Weed series and also a Freedom Fiend series. So if you want to see Jay Tizzle holding the shotgun and have it be attached to a real silver dime, like not one of the fake pieces of token that you get nowadays with your change, but a real honest-to-goodness silver dime pre-1964, you can head over to our website, freedomfiends.com, and there's actually a silver dime tab. Just click on that and buy as many as you want. You can hand them out to your status friends, and it's a good icebreaker to say, hey, that crap you got in your couch, that's fake money. Real money, fool.
So go to the link at the top of freedomfiends.com that says Freedom Fiends Silver Dimes. And the dimes are great too. I mean, I like the dimes they designed. They have libertarian hero FDR on the front, and they have the they have the anarcho-capitalist symbol on the back, the bundle of wheat.
The fascist symbol?
Yeah.
The anarcho-fascist symbol. There you go.
Yeah, they have fascist, social progressive FDR on the front and the actual symbol for fascism on the back. Although new dimes still have both those things. They're just made out of something that's worth a lot less. That's not even worth a dime, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Which was, of course, the foregone conclusion. So,
actually, I think most money now, most metal money is worth a little more. Like a dime is worth 12 cents or something. And I think they passed a law to outlaw melting them down because people were doing that.
I hadn't heard that, but you're probably right. The last time I checked on it was with nickels. A couple of years ago, somebody wrote an article explaining how much more expensive nickels were if you melted them down for the metal. And they were like, save your nickels because, you know, that's the new dime. So, yeah, you might be right about the other coins too. Somebody did a story too, showing how much money the federal government loses on coining coins. Because not only is the metal now worth more, but it also costs to, you know, mint them, to make them, to actually do the work. So it was something like billions of dollars the government loses just making loose change.
They also printed some that were like misprinted, and they spent billions of dollars having to destroy them and reprint them.
That's different though. See, that's just paper. But yeah, I think it was even on paper because they try so hard to keep it from being counterfeited, or rather to make sure they're the only ones doing
the counterfeiting. To the point where like they'll throw you in prison for making something that doesn't even really compete and doesn't look like it. they'll throw you
a domestic terrorist.
And they'll throw you in prison for that and call you domestic terrorist so they can keep their monopoly of losing money to print bad fake money.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of misusing the terms like terrorists and things like that, did you read that article? New York Times put out a thing saying that basically anybody who's a fighting age male when there's a drone strike, they consider them an enemy combatant or a militant.
Yeah. Yeah, any male in the vicinity who's killed is a militant. Yeah, I got tons of examples today of, you know, they can do it, but we can't. U.S. and Israel, it's been confirmed that they created Stuxnet, the virus that was supposed to take down the Iranian.
Supposed to take down the centrifuges at, I think it was Natanz, the apparent place where they enrich the uranium in Iran. And, you know, who was it? David Sanger. That's who he was. He's writing a book about it, or I don't know if it's about that, but it's about all the things Obama's doing. And I think it's even written from a praiseworthy point. I don't think he's being very critical necessarily of the Obama administration. But yeah, he points out that both the Obama administration and I think the Israelis have admitted to Stuxnet, and then that it got out of hand. So they were trying to put the cat in the bag, and because of that, they had to admit that they were the ones who created the virus.
Miles just emailed us and said, are you guys recording? I don't know if that's like he wants to make sure he's recorded before he calls in, or if he's just being a mensch and reminding us.
I didn't hear the sound. Did you click record, Michael?
Yeah, it's recording. It's recording. Okay. You were introducing us.
Ah, is that the case?
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, the funny part about this whole Stuxnet thing is the Obama administration was trying to play the blame game. Biden was quoted as saying, it's got to be the Israelis, he said. They went too far.
Do my bidding. Yeah, it's like the two guys who are on the same team blaming each other. We didn't do it.
Yeah. They don't want to get caught holding the bag.
So somebody either came up with it independent of us or borrowed our idea and petitioned the Obama administration to create a do not kill list.
I saw that. We were calling it the slaves suggestion box.
Well, yeah, it's part of Obama's, you know, promise of transparency, which is ridiculous, is that they started a thing on the whitehouse.gov website where you can start petitions. And if they get enough signatures, someone will read them, which is really like, you know, we're still going to kill all the brown people, but you can make suggestions of how to do it or something, you know, and like, exactly. You can tell us to legalize marijuana and we're still not going to do it. But, you know, we have transparency.
What flavor of tyranny would you like?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They I guess this was the petition. The New York Times reports that President Obama has created an official kill list that he uses to personally order the assassination of American citizens. Considering that the government already has a do not call list and a no fly list, we hereby request that the White House create a do not kill list in which American citizens can sign up to avoid being put on the president's kill list and therefore avoid being executed without indictment, judge, jury, trial, and due process.
That's awesome.
And you told me it had 3,700 signatures in a day.
Yeah. You know, and I would guess that everybody who signed that probably got put on a watch list.
Probably. Well, that's the other thing. Can you do this anonymously? Is it like a secret ballot, or when you go to whitehouse.gov or whatever it is, do you have to like give them your email or phone number and stuff like that?
I don't know. I wouldn't dare try it.
To whitehouse.gov in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose you could use a proxy maybe and hide your IP address. But first of all, they probably don't let you do it from a proxy. You know, there's an easy way to keep people from doing that. And second of all, you know, the central scrutinizer building that they're building in Utah, I'm sure one of the things it can do is route around your proxy to find out who you really are.
Yeah, I think it's a nice, funny way of pissing off the slave master. Although
it is some good politic.
When I first read it, it kind of made me scared because I was thinking, all right, so if we have a no kill list, does that mean everybody else is on a de facto kill list?
Well, you know, one of the things in that article about drones that was in Rolling Stone magazine that really appalled me was the process for targeting someone for droning. You know, it's basically like military intelligence says blah, 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 and then they take it to a lawyer. They don't take it to a judge, you know, and this is like being a minarchist or a statist, like, but I'm saying, like, back to that thing of they should even follow their own rules and they don't, you know.
Yeah.
A lawyer can't issue, you know, a warrant of any kind, an arrest warrant,
and where does that lawyer's paycheck come from? Who's buttering his bread? I think we all know that.
People telling him to kill people, telling him to kill people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's just ridiculous. And, you know, the other point about this, and Glenn Greenwald brings this up, is that, you know, when places like the New York Times and the Washington Post then go on to report on the drone attacks and they say such and such militants were killed, they're being propagandist for the state. According to Greenwald, he says that, you know, whenever you use that word militant, because you're using the government's definition, which is just any fighting age males, you're knowingly being an instrument for state propaganda.
I found something really interesting. You know, it goes back to that. They always go after the bad, scary people when they roll out something unconstitutional. There were some white supremacists that were recently arrested this week in Florida for paramilitary training. That was the charge. Paramilitary training. And I like, they described it and I'm like, wait, that sounds like people going to the gun range to me.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And that's like and what we did when we shot our movie, right?
Yeah, and I guess paramilitary training is normal gun training, but you know, if you have said you're going to do something to the government, but what if you just don't like the government? You're not planning on doing anything to it, but you just don't like it. Is that paramilitary training?
It's whatever they want it to be, and that's the problem.
Well, it's an election year, too, so we're going to see more stuff like that, which we'll talk about soon after these ads from our wonderful sponsors. These messages from our wonderful sponsors.
Gotta pay the bills. Hi, I'm Nima Vidati
from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate.
I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmiths. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmiths. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kitties.
Available in 4 strengths and 10 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, Coffee, Minty Mint, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com. Use coupon code FREEDOMFIEND to get 25% off your order. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com.
Fiends Live, we are back on the air.
Yeah.
You can call us, but I'll wait to give you the number because we got somebody on the line here. But first, Michael Dubb, you got something to tell us.
My cat, man. I want to talk about my cat. Blah, 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 the government, blah, blah, blah,
blah, blah, cats.
So we have 3 cats, and our mellowest cat, Peanut, who we call Tiffany, because Peanut's like a pretty little girl, even though he's a boy. Peanut was acting rabid. I mean, he was acting insane, like a switch went off. Like, all of a sudden, he started attacking the other cats violently. Like, there was fur flying, cats were bleeding. He didn't recognize his brother, his litter mate, that he usually lies in a pile with 24/7. I mean, it was scary. It was really scary. We didn't get any sleep. We'd go to sleep and we'd hear this. And we took him to the vet in the morning and, excuse me, they drugged him and they trimmed his nails and he was better, man. All it took was 1/4 of a pill of kitty drugs.
And, any idea what it was, though? I mean, I'd still be worried about what the hell causes something like that. Is that just the zombie apocalypse? Or
maybe,
what?
Yeah. He didn't eat anyone's face, but he tried.
he was trying.
Yeah, it was just, it wasn't rabies because he's not an outdoor cat and there were no mice or bats in the house and they cannot get it from an insect. So we don't know. The only thing we can think of is a couple hours before it happened, Charlie, the indoor-outdoor cat, was in the enclosed backyard, and we heard her hissing and spitting, and we went out there, and we didn't see any other cats, but I think there was a cat on the other side of the fence, and maybe it sprayed through the fence, and some got on Charlie, and then some of the spray smell got on Peanut, or he just smelled it and flipped out. I don't know.
Isn't he neutered, though?
Yeah. Yeah, but cats... you know, interloper cat smells will still make cats go off. So anyway, that's my my advice. If anyone has a cat that flips out, take it to the vet.
Obviously.
And get it drugged.
Or put a laundry hamper over him and put a brick on top.
It wouldn't have worked, man. he wouldn't have calmed down.
He would have torn through it.
So, Miles, do you have cats?
No, I haven't had a cat in a long time, actually. They kept dying on me, unfortunately. It wouldn't be my fault. It'd usually be some gall darn local dog that ripped him to shreds.
I blame the government. I think the government dosed my cat or something. And we thought, too, like there's nothing in the house that he could have eaten that would have done that. Except, like, my wife takes thyroid medication, but none of them were missing. It wasn't open. I have seen ants that have licked a thyroid pill, and they act quite animated. But, no, there was nothing the cat got.
Okay. So anyway, we didn't properly introduce you, Miles. This is Miles, and where are you calling from? Is it Nevada?
Reno, Nevada.
Reno.
And the reason why I'm calling is you mentioned those guys that got arrested doing paramilitary training. I just came back from some paramilitary training, and while I was out there, I met some honest to God reviewers.
Yeah.
Really?
Enforcement agents from the IRS.
And they were participating in this, where'd you go, gun sight?
LMS Defense. It was their Customer Appreciation Day. Well, technically, it's still wow. Customer Appreciation Weekend. Free training. But
was it free training for for Fed goons, or was it free training for anybody?
For anybody.
Yeah, I guess paramilitary training would be any gun training where there's not a government official standing next to you taking gun training.
Well, what was really funny was the first thing I said to him was, so how come you're here on Customer Appreciation Day? Or the budget cutbacks even worse than I thought? And the guy just laughed in my face and said, oh, come on, like an agency would pay for this sort of thing.
Oh, man.
Well, yeah. What kind of guys were they? I mean, did you ask why do you make a living out of stealing our money? Or what kind of interaction did you have with them?
No, I wasn't that bold, but another New Zealander I was with had a long conversation with them, and boy, they talked about some very interesting stuff. One of the things they said was, if a IRS agent comes up to you and they're not wearing a badge or a gun, they're just affected like a paper pusher on the civil side of things, they said, and they start asking you questions and demanding things, they can demand more of you and get more out of you because they're not sworn law enforcement.
Yeah, I saw some list recently of, like, you know, what to ask federal agents when they talk to you. And some of it seemed solid, but some of it seemed like nutty magic word redemption crap, which I just can't believe people believe that. I mean, there is a moral backing to the idea of redemption, but there's no legal backing to it, and it doesn't work. And everyone that does it ends up in prison.
But in that situation, can't you just say, hey, talk to my lawyer? I mean, like you would do if a cop pulls you over or if a cop's grilling you. Can't you just say, you know, I'm not going to self-incriminate. Talk to my lawyer if you want to talk about anything. Can't you do that?
Well, what you can do is, if an agent approaches you and wants to ask you questions, is say, I would prefer to do this at my lawyer's office, and give them the name of your lawyer and set up an appointment. That's what I would do.
Well, one of the other things that came up was I asked them if they'd ever had any run-ins. They were starting to talk about sovereign citizens, so I asked them if they ever had any run-ins with anarchists, and they said, no, never had any run-ins with them, but these sovereign citizen types, we once got a guy who had renounced his U.S. citizenship and was acting a bit belligerent, who was 7 foot tall and 400 pounds.
Well, there's a guy here in Casper that tried to do sovereign citizen tribunals on some local judges and law enforcement, and, you know, put liens on their houses and stuff, and the county ended up taking his land, you know. So anybody who thinks those magic words make the boogeyman go away, that's the result I've seen from it.
Well, how did these IRS guys say they dealt with the 7 foot tall sovereign citizen?
Three of their guys took him down, basically, hand to hand. By the sound of it, I was going to comment to him about a thing where you had this bunch of superheroes trying to take down this horrible monster, and one of them tried to drop a tree on him. The monster grabbed the tree and started smacking him around with the tree, and they just basically said, oh, great, why didn't you just hand him a machine gun?
Yeah, you know, I imagine that, I don't know if this would be the correct term, but I think that anarchists are probably more law-abiding than sovereign citizen people. Not law-abiding, but less hassle for the sake of hassle to those kind of people, you know?
I think the word you might be looking for is peaceful.
Yeah. Anarchists just want to be left alone. Sovereign citizens want to, I can't speak for all of them, but what I've seen a lot of them do is they want to have, like, their own courts and believe that will work.
I think they want to be lords of all they survey.
What's that?
I think they want to be lords of all that they survey, which is quite a bit different than just leaving things alone.
Well, the guy here who got his land taken away, all he surveyed was, like, about 20 acres of crap and dying cars and junk, which, you know, we have defended before that it's his right to have that.
Yeah, it was his crap.
But then again, it's, you know, that's your kingdom, okay? I don't know. I'm not sticking up for him today as much as I did before. I don't know what's up.
Tired of the false economy? Want to carry real money in a form that people will dig getting? Don't Tread on Meme now has Freedom Fiends and Guns and Weed silver dime cards. Collect all four. Trade them with your friends. Freedom Fiends silver dime cards are also great for starting conversations with statists about liberty. Go to freedomfiends.com today and click the link at the top that says silver dime cards. That's freedomfiends.com.
Well, I guess it's the fact that he was trying to put liens against judges. You know, they were using the tactics of the state, which is, I think, what you're getting at. You can't use the tactics of the state and claim to be, you know, free or an anarchist. Because then you're just being, you know, instead of beating them, you're joining them, basically.
Yep. Worms. Well, thanks for calling in, man.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
We're going to open it up for more. Worms.
Alrighty.
Worms. So, yeah, we got more Freedom Fiends Live coming up soon, so please stay tuned.
After these exciting words from our friends.
Have you been looking for a safe, scenic, and inspiring place to live free? We chose Wyoming. Wyoming is the home of Free State Wyoming and the personal choice of Boston Tea Party, as well as the setting of his book, Moulin LaBaye. Bring the family and stop by for the 2012 Free State Wyoming Jamboree for 4 days of camping, shooting, and barbecue. There'll be trading, hiking, a raffle, and plenty of activities for the kids. Admission is free for those under 18. Entrance and 4 days camping is $15. It's only $15 more for the barbecue and beer on Saturday. Visit freestatewyoming.org. There's even a one-day handgun course led by Boston. The handgun course is extra. The Jamboree is June 28th through July 1st in the beautiful Black Hills of Wyoming. Join us to explore our favorite area of the country and see if our choice might become your choice. That's freestatewyoming.org. See you there.
Fiends, and I'm going to give out the call-in number now because we don't have anybody on the line. So it's 307-215-5171. So give us a call. You'll get right on the air. It's 307-215-5171. Or email us at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
So I want to talk about cyber begging among anarcho-capitalists. I think it's a bad
idea.
Cyber
begging?
I mean, someone could say we do it. We have a PayPal thing, and, you know, we say give donations or stuff. But I was talking to someone recently that's doing a kind of big project that I could do for $0, but they think they need to, you know, rent airplanes and things. And first of all, I'm like, if I would really put my mind to it, I could get free use of an airplane somehow. I know I could. I could talk anybody into anything. But yeah. I really think...
Tell them just make friends with their local TV reporter like you did.
Yeah. I mean, I really think, yeah, you could have gone to an airplane. You could have gone and said, I need to film a story at an airport and then filmed something for your movie on the side. Yeah.
I would have just shot stuff when I went and did a TSA story and got sound bites about how great it was.
You could have taken me with you as a second camera and just said, yeah, this is a new guy. I'm training him.
My intern, Michael Dean.
Yeah. Yeah. But... you know, it goes back to this thing in AA, and AA seems silly to a lot of people, but I really like a lot of the like structure of it and how it works as an organization and how it's kind of like anarchy mixed with democracy, if that makes sense.
Anarchic order. It's rules that you choose to obey because they may make your life better.
What did you call it? Anarchic order?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or panarchy. You know, choose your own level of tyranny. But there's this thing in AA, one of the traditions of AA is that all of our groups are self-supporting. I can't remember the exact wording of it. It's one of the traditions, but it's like, it basically said, what basically happened was when AA started, some rich industrialist, I think it was one of the Rockefellers maybe, had like a dinner for AA to like introduce it to the press, you know, so people could write stories about it and say, this works. It's actually curing alcoholics if they're drinking. And he offered them a whole bunch of money. And, you know, they went and thought about it and prayed on it and had a group meeting about it and a group conscience, and they turned it down. And the reason they turned it down, which I really liked, was, you know, and they were starving. I mean, they couldn't even like find rooms to meet in. They were, you know, meeting in church basements. That's how that started because they didn't have
couldn't even afford the free coffee.
Yeah. And they turned down a large sum, you know, it was several hundred thousand dollars, which in the 20s was millions. And they turned it down because they wanted to, not have anybody able to have any claim or say on them. You know, like people, when people give money, they usually want some input.
They didn't want strings attached.
Yeah. And more importantly, the B is they wanted to present an image of recovering alcoholics as self-sufficient, because alcoholics have such a tradition of begging and, you know, oh, right, give me some money now, I'll pay you Tuesday kind of thing. And they wanted to undo that. So all AA meetings are self-supporting. You know, they pass a basket, you put in what you can, and that's what pays for the coffee and anything that's left over. You know, you have a prudent reserve in case someone breaks a window in the church and you have to pay it, some drunk, you know. And then anything that's left over from that, you send off to the National Services and the World Services, which helps run the offices. And I really like that idea of being self-sufficient. And I think that anarcho-capitalism or voluntarism or all those other isms that our listeners and we fall under, I really think if we're projecting an idea of we want to create an alternate economy, then that alternate economy should not include aggressive cyber begging.
You know? Okay. Yeah, I can see your point. And I think there is a distinction to make because, like you said, we do have a donate page on freedomfiends.com. But to me, if you're going to go for this sort of panhandling metaphor, then what right. that is that's more like the hat that the musician
that's the hat.
Puts down.
It is.
Yeah. That's the hat that you throw in a quarter, but we're actually providing a service. You know, we're speaking the fiends. And so you can throw a dollar in the hat if you'd like.
Whereas putting a business plan on a funding website and saying we need this much to do this, this, and this, and this, and you know, being aggressive about it kind of comes off more like applying for government grants. I mean, I wouldn't say government grants, but you know, I'd say if you have something you want to fund, I think you'd be better off going to friends and family too than putting it out in public of, you know, dear public anybodies, give us money.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I see where you're coming from. I don't see anything wrong with it per se, but I do see maybe there's a level of decorum that you'd like to see, I guess, pursued a little bit better as far as showing that we're self-sufficient. I mean, the other thing I feel like is there's this grand community of people in the freedom movement. I mean, you can go out like you're going out for investors, you know, go to some of the bigwigs or the libertarian billionaires, pitch them your project and say, hey, you know, we could use a little bit of extra funding.
I've actually thought about that, but I've also thought of it for us. They'd be like, we're not touching you with a 10, you know, you're talking about paramilitary training. I'm not touching that. You're huffing jankum. No way, man. You don't wear it. You only wear a tie when you're making fun of people wearing ties.
Right, right. So then our solution and our strategy has always been just do it, you know? I hate to bite Nike on that. But
hip-hop artists don't beg. They go slang cane on the street corner to finance their record.
Or you just do it, you know? Scrape together some money, buy yourself the cheapest gear that'll work well, and just put your art together and then put it out there in the world. And if people like it, you know, it's like Andre said, that rap shit's really just like selling smoke. If you got some fire shit, people are always going to know. So you just do it. And if people like it, you'll get the funding then. And then you can do bigger projects later on.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. I kind of have this feeling of like, if something's worthwhile, people will support it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which isn't saying, you know, you're not going to starve the first year or two. You do it and have to work two jobs to support it. But so it is. You know, there it is.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. And I'm not bitching at anybody who does that, but it's such a common thing to do now that it seems like the go-to thing of, oh, you know, you're starting to blah, blah, blah. You go to a funding website. You know, there's a whole bunch of them. And it's like somebody, Crack Magazine actually did a really funny article about bands funding themselves that way and how pathetic it was.
Yeah, I think your comment was, why would I pay you so you can screw a bunch of girls on tour?
Yeah. And, you know, I earned my right to do that. I did that, but we didn't cyber beg. We worked as bike messengers and bartenders and did construction so we could have money to buy a van and fix it up and, you know, book tours and go on tour.
Here's the question I have. I guess I've always felt like it doesn't really work.
I did paid drug testing with weird drugs that may have screwed me up for life to finance the first record I did.
Yeah. Yeah. You suffered for your art. Which is, I guess the other thing is, does this stuff really work? I mean, putting your pitch on a funding website, do people really get enough money to do their projects?
People have funded, and there's actually been, there've been like lawsuits over it too, because people have to be really careful, like what they promise, you know, like, first of all, you can't promise legally that you're going to make the project. Cause then if you don't, everyone that donated could have a class action suit against you. And people have to be really clear that it's not, that it's not an investment, you know, it's a donation. And then they have to be really clear that it's not a tax deductible donation if it's not. You know, an interesting thing.
Why is it not tax deductible?
Darren Aronofsky, who did Requiem for a Dream, his first movie was this black and white, really intense, really weird movie called Pi.
Pi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've seen it?
No, but I know of it. It was on my to-do list or my to-watch list.
It's about some like murderous Hasidic Jews who are, you know, going after the code of the universe or something. but it's actually, if you look at the end of that movie, there's a special thanks section and it's got like 200 names in it. They're all Jewish names too. But they're people, he went to like all his friends and family and friends of friends and family and borrowed $100 from all of them. He borrowed it. He paid it back too. You know, he got like 600 people to donate $100 each. And that's what, $600,000?
Yeah. Yeah. That's plenty. That's a lot of money to make a
movie. Or it's $60,000, I think.
For your first movie.
Yeah.
Even then, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Kevin Smith. Isn't the story about Kevin Smith making Clerks that he just took out a bunch of credit cards and bought everything on his credit cards, hoping
that's
basically a gamble, but he did it.
That's how people used to do stuff. And it's not recommended. It only, you know,
I wouldn't recommend putting any debt on credit cards because the interest is so high. But he made a gamble. He thought of something and he did it. And, you know, it paid off for him in the end.
Yeah. Worms. So support yourself, man. Make your own art. It doesn't cost anything. My new movie I'm spending $200 on my new movie. And that's mostly for gas.
It might cost $30 if you really need some help and buy $30 Film School. Or just listen to us and we'll talk about it.
Or download $30 Film School, my book, on Pirate Bay.
There you go. Well, we got plenty more Freedom Fiends Live coming up for you, so stick with us.
Worms.
Would you like to advertise?
All the arguments against anarchy from the statists were like, he was just saying, well, there'd be a state, basically. He said, well, if you didn't have a government, then you'd have, you know, people that controlled you through this, or people who would use violence for that. But that's still a state. The state is when you have a group or a person actively aggressing against you, stealing your money. It doesn't matter if we call it a government, or if we call it a church, or if we call it a corporation, or warlords. All of those are forms
the church-
of the state.
Yeah, which when people say, oh, if you want a libertarian paradise, move to Somalia. There's no government. And you can carry all the guns you want. And I'm like, there is a government there. There's warlords. You know, and I always go back to the one reason people can't citizens or, you know, non-warlords and non-government people can't defend themselves in Somalia is because the UN came in and took all the guns.
Yeah.
To save people.
Right. That's the other good point about Somalia is people say, well, it doesn't have a government. Well, it does have a government. The government of Somalia is the United States and the UN because they actively intervene and have been actively intervening since for at least a decade, probably longer. And I think you can read something called Blowback in Somalia might be it, maybe by Jeremy Scahill. Scott Horton's always talking about it. I haven't read it yet, but I've heard enough about it because, you know, I hear about it on his podcast all the time. And, you know, Somalia did not come to a realization. Somalians didn't say, oh, well, we don't want a government because we're all anarcho-capitalists now. You know, intervention from foreigners basically destroyed their government, and they've been living in a hellhole ever since, imposed by foreign intervention.
Yeah, and you know, you made a point about the church. The church was the state for thousands of years. And, you know, before that, the church, I'm talking about the Catholic Church or the Protestant churches, you know, before that, the Jewish law was the law. I mean, Jesus was killed by the government. And we say that, we had Mama Liberty say that in the movie. I wrote that line. But somebody expanded on that yesterday on Facebook in a way I really liked, was Jesus was killed by the government, by soldiers and police who were following orders. And he was tried in a trial and sentenced, and the charge was sedition. That's fact.
Yeah.
And that's
sure
fact.
Was.
I think that's fact even if you're not a Christian. I'm not a Christian, but I don't dispute that historically that person lived and a lot of those things happened and he had a following.
Well, here's the other thing. You bring up a great point that the church was the state. And that's why, you know, in the not the Reformation necessarily, but with the Enlightenment ideas, the idea was separate the church from the state. And then you'll get rid of all this violence. But then we ended up having the problem was having the state is the state. So I think we should start focusing on separating the state from reality.
So are you saying that the Reformation idea of separating church and state increased the state?
No, it just moved the state. Well, Maybe, because once that was moved away, people think, oh, the state is us. You know, oh, the government's us. We the people, yada, yada. And I think people gave the state more of a free pass at that point, and they still do, to where the state essentially became the new religion. And that, I think that's where we're at now. So I think we need to focus on removing the state from the universe, separating the state from the universe.
I mean, the church existed as strong as it did, as long as it did. And it's still strong in a way, but it's really
fiend
not.
Fiend phone.
Hang on a sec.
We got a fiend phone.
Answer the fiend phone and fiend finish making phone. Your point, and then we'll bring him on.
Hello, caller. Let me finish my point, and then we'll bring you on gladly. So I know that a lot of our listeners are Christian, but my basic feeling on Christianity is, you know, first of all, it was created when a wheelbarrow would have been a vast advance in technology. Second of all, I think that a lot of what was done with it, maybe this isn't how it was set up, but a lot of what was done with it by the church was to put a huge gun to your head that was bigger than "we will kill you." It was "we will kill your soul." And back then, the average life was so short and brutal and nasty that you really couldn't necessarily scare people by saying, "if you don't comply, we'll kill you." But they had this idea of you'll have this fluffy cloud afterlife with harps and everything will be great and everyone you love will be there. To where the church would say, "we can take that away from you too." You know, so it seems to me like something that kings used to control people with a imaginary gun to their head.
Right. Of course, the important distinction is these aren't the teachings of Jesus. This is what men did when they got a hold of the power of the church. This isn't necessarily theological, but it's more what people did with it.
I mean, a lot of the angry God stuff that carries over into Christianity came from Judaism, from the Old Testament. You know, it's not the teachings of Christ. And Christ had a New Testament, which undid a lot of that. So we got a caller
a new covenant,
here. What did I say?
New Testament.
So caller, who is our caller, Fiend?
This is Mr. Abstracto.
Hey, what's up, man? You want our camera. I remember that. How's the camera working out?
Good.
Take some Liberty pictures and send them to us. So what's on your mind today, Mr. Abstracto?
Well, you were talking about Somalia, and one thing I just wanted to point out is that it wasn't so much the foreign intervention that caused the collapse of their government. They had a very socialist government that nationalized all property right before it collapsed. And then the people who were in charge of these various nationalized resources, they're the ones who are now the warlords.
Ah, so the government became the mafia.
Basically, that's what happens when you nationalize all property.
Yeah.
I think it's a mix of both, though, because I think the reason why you can have warlords like that is because you have this foreign interloper. So the warlords are able to get the people on board with being under their warlorddom, I guess.
That's happened a lot in Africa. I mean, we have a friend in Ghana who's telling me about how that's happening now, where, you know, they're trying to socialize everything, and it's just backfiring to the point where people can't sell fruit on the street.
Right. Well,
do you want to hang out with us, and we'll have more with you after the break?
Sure.
A congressman recently reviewed.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, we're wondering how the feed sounds out there, because on our end, it's sounding really distorted when the commercials are playing, although I listen on another computer to the main feed, and it sounded fine. Email us or call us and let us know how it's sounding on your end. And speaking of callers, Derek, what's up?
Yeah, not much. Sounds kind of fine on my end.
Cool.
Okay. Good deal.
Drop some mad science. Well, you had something to pimp. What was it?
Yeah, the Freedom Fiends Fun Forum.
Yeah.
The link is on the Freedom Fiends main site. It's a kicking place, man.
Yep.
If you want to go, Mama Liberty posts there all the time.
Yep. And an unnamed expert in survivalism, if you have questions on that. And there's a section on BDSM. It's called Free Sex. It's about freedom and sex. And it gets a lot of traffic of people who don't stick around because they don't find naked pictures. But there's a lot of good talk there if you're interested in BDSM, bondage, dominant submission, or just fun ass play. You can go there. Spankings. So, go check that out. Freedom Fiends Fun Forum. We also have a new little link on the site. There's a newegg.com link down the side of the page a little bit. If you order things on Newegg, which is a great site, if you order through that, we get a little bit of money and it doesn't cost you any more. So you can help the fiends when you order those parts to make that underground radio station or whatever.
Nice. So very similar to the way Amazon works with clicking through Amazon through us.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice. Very good deal. And Mr. Abstractor, did you have any other mad science to drop about Somalia?
No, I think that's it. I'm going to let somebody else call in.
Worms.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, man. Take it easy.
Yeah, you take it easy.
So yes. I think he's right about that, how it's sort of disintegrated in Somalia. Although I am reading now that American-sponsored organizations and the CIA do fund the warlords that are currently fighting in Somalia. So that's, I guess, the foreign intervention I was talking about is, you know, the state sort of dissolved into warlords. And then, of course, the Americans and other organizations then give the warlords weapons and money and tell them to, hey, go out there and fight. You know, act like a state. We'll give you a bunch of money.
There was a page I had bookmarked on Wikipedia, and I can't find it now, but it was like the list of like interventionism the CIA has done with various regimes in the 20th and 21st century is pretty mind-blowing.
Oh, that's got to be such a long list. And yes. That's just the stuff that people have found out about. I mean, it's the freaking CIA, so there's probably dozens more or maybe double the effect that you don't hear about or can't read about, I would imagine.
Yes. Yes. Although, seems like they're admitting things more than they used to. Like, they're just not admitting. They just don't need to cover it up anymore. I mean, a lot of what high-level agencies now put on their websites is stuff that in the 60s would have been secret memos internally.
Yeah. Yeah, well, people don't care anymore. I mean, they're too busy watching So You Think You Can Dance or whatever. And they don't really care if the CIA is going and causing a bunch of strife overseas because they don't feel like it affects them. Or in a lot of cases, they feel like that's what the CIA is supposed to do, you know?
Instead of watching Are You Smarter Than a 5-Year-Old or Smarter Than a Fifth Grader, they should be watching Are You More Inquisitive Than a Fifth Grader? Do you buy the BS as much as a fifth grader?
Yeah, yeah, I guess. I feel like the fifth graders are forced to buy the BS. And if they don't buy the BS, they don't get good grades.
I know. I'm wondering when the government is going to admit that public schools are brainwashing, you know, are statism training.
I mean, they kind of already do. I remember when I was going to school, at least in my high school government class, they were explaining one of the reasons for schools, at least from the government's perspective, is I believe they called it socialization or something to that effect. But it was getting you indoctrinated into all the workings of the state so you know how it works and you know why the state is there to be your protector.
Well, I had a class at my boarding school, but you know, this is not unusual. This could be in a public school. They had it earlier in public schools. We had a class called citizenship, which was basically how to vote, how to fold and display a flag, what the holidays are, what they mean, the three branches of government, you know, so you could sound like an educated slave as you pull the slave's suggestion box lever.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, then the worst thing is
the importance of paying taxes was a big part of it. Explaining all the wonderful services your taxes provide.
Exactly. And then people get this idea in their head that, you know, if you want to change something, you can do it. You just have to do it through the system. And the flip side of that coin is they think, you know, you should always follow the rules because there is this great democratic process. If you want something changed, you can change it. And if it doesn't work, then screw you, guy. You have to follow the rules that the majority voted for.
One of my favorite, like, kind of sarcastic takes on that is an Entourage where the boys go to buy some guns because someone tried to break into their mansion, and they go to the gun store, and you know, he holds up this giant revolver that makes my 6-inch one look like a pea shooter, and he's like, this is good, we'll take about a dozen of these, you know, because he's a multimillionaire. And the guy's like, okay, great. And he's like, so we just put them in a bag, or you want to carry them out for us, or how's it work? And he's like, you have to come back in 10 days. And he's like, 10 days, but we're in danger now. And the like kind of like redneck militia type at the gun store behind the counter says, call your government.
Yeah, call your
like,
congressman.
He's being sarcastic, you know, like he's probably tried that before. Call your government. Right. And then he just sells him a bunch of knives.
Which is just ridiculous. I like the way it worked in Arrested Development better, where they tell Tobias that there's a waiting show. And he's like, wait, isn't there some kind of loophole? Oh. And he's like, yeah, there's a gun show loophole. And he's like, wait, oh, well, where can I go to a gun show? And he's like, there's one going on right now. And he just puts a sign on his desk that says gun show.
No, I think it's in the parking lot in back, isn't it?
Oh, that's it. Yeah. It might be.
Which isn't really how it works, especially in California. In California, there was a big lawsuit. Like the Alameda State Fairgrounds had a gun show regularly, and like some anti-gun groups blocked it because it was on public property. And gun shows in California too, it's like you can't buy a gun. Everyone there's an FFL holder, and if you buy a gun, you pay for it, and then you come to their store 10 days later and pick it up. You know, gun shows there,
you can't do private sales.
No, gun shows there are where you buy, you know, holsters and books on and food on the spot, and then you know, yes, look at guns you might want to buy later, which it's would still serve a function. A show, not, you know, not a yeah, sale. You know, because it's a bunch of guns in one place, you get to look at them. But yeah,
the other thing is, I imagine you have to get some kind of permit from the city or the county or wherever, and prove to the government that it's some kind of legitimate or meets some kind of criteria for a gun show. Is yeah, what I would imagine as well.
Who the hell's calling me?
Yeah, they should be calling the Fiend phone.
What's 477 area code? The Dean phone. I know. Mexico? Someone's calling me from Mexico?
Maybe it's Eric Holder.
Or Illinois. Oh, it's Illinois. Who the hell would call me from Illinois? That's weird.
Yeah.
It's probably someone who ignores the do not kill list. It's probably the drone phone. Drone phone.
Right. They're calling you to tell you to say your prayers. You're about to be droned.
Oh, you know what it is? It's somebody calling on our old call-in number that's Google Voice, because I just got a Google Voice message for it. Remember the first episode we had a different one? That must still be listed somewhere.
When you were duct taping the phone microphone. Yes.
Let me listen to this message and see what it is. Play message.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to answer it. Hang on.
All right. While Michael's answering that, let me let you know what the real call number is. It's 307-215-5171. So don't call the old phone. Call us at 307-215-5171.
Hello, who's this?
And I guess we'll get Brecht in and listen to Michael Dean right now.
Are you calling in for the Fiends? The show's live. Do you want it? Well, they can't hear you, though. You got to call a different number or Skype us. Do you have Skype? Can you call a phone without paying $1,000?
Give him the number.
Okay, we're live here. Let me give you the number. It's 307-215-5171. That's 307-215-5171. Call us on that and we'll Skype you on in. Okay, thanks.
See, and that's an example of how live radio is not supposed to work.
That was Al from Norway. He's calling in. Yeah.
Wow. All
right. Al from Norway.
Norway. Yeah, you were talking about Scandinavian countries the other week, so
yeah,
maybe he's got some mad science to drop about living up there in the cold fjords.
Yeah, they're pretty much closing out all the American stuff here in Norway now.
Yeah.
Are they really? Well, that's news to me, but why don't you tell us a little bit about it? We got Al on the line, and you're calling from Norway?
Yeah. Yeah. Hang on a sec. We got a call waiting. Let me get it and come back. If we get cut off, call us back, Al.
Yes, please.
Hey, what? Who's this fiend calling? You're on hold.
It's Dave. I'm up in Minneapolis. I got nothing else. You know, what's going on?
Hey, Dave, we got another caller first. We're going to put you on hold. If you get knocked off, call back, okay?
Fantastic.
Thanks, Dave.
And I think I hung up on... let me see if I can call back. On hold. All right. Here. Yeah. Hello. Hello. Hello.
Damn it.
So we've managed to hang up on all our callers, Nima Hammadi.
I guess so. Well, hopefully they'll call back.
We're radio pros here, man.
Yeah, I know. We deserve an award. Worst podcast ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So, apparently we had our call-in number was still the old number on some LRN BBS.
Fiend phone. Fiend
there we
phone.
Go. We got the fiend phone.
Fiend.
Is this Al?
Yeah,
this is Hey, Al. All right, you're on the air. What's up? You want to talk about sex, huh?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
No, me and I kind of been giving you and Dale from Prometheus Unchanged Flaming Freedom, I mean, about the whole tops and bottoms thing, because you both call yourself tops, and I was like, I don't like this tops thing. And I've been pretty much complaining to everybody I know, saying, God, I just can't understand that whole top and bottom thing. And they looked at me funny. And then I finally just was, complaining to my wife about it, saying, I just don't get this top and bottom thing. And she said, well, you're a top. I am. And I guess if you're just a vanilla regular couple, it just never comes up.
Well, you can. You're definitely right to argue with Dale, because I argue with Dale, and he's never actually contacted me back. It's one of those pod beefs that I have. I think he's doing it wrong or saying it wrong. But what did I say that's wrong that you're disagreeing with?
Oh, I don't disagree with anything. It's just that if you have a relationship where it's, what do you call it?
Hang on a
Dominant
sec.
Submission?
Hey, DJ, yeah. Come get this BDSM. Sandwich and come take my sandwich away. I'm done with it. Thanks, baby. Okay.
See that's an example.
Of
that's
what
we're talking about.
What are we talking about? Yeah, I don't know what you mean.
Yes, you do.
And just to have this conversation, I am in my driveway hiding in my pickup.
Okay. So your wife can't hear you?
No. Hell no.
Well, I'd say that's not really a top then, if you have to hide in the shed.
Well, she's the one who called me a top. I don't call myself a top.
Was she kind of snide when she said it? Was she kind of criticizing you?
No. She just, that's just the way a heterosexual vanilla couple is.
Here's the thing. Yeah. Here's the difference. I mean, the nomenclature, I don't get into it a whole lot. It's the same way of like, am I an anarchist, a voluntarist, a libertarian? I don't know. And there are people who, what do they call those people, DJ, that argue about nomenclature in BDSM? Protocol queens.
Yes.
Yeah, whether they're male or female or straight or gay. Protocol queens are people that worry a lot about that kind of stuff, and I don't worry about it. I just kind of do it. It's kind of like, I don't know what kind of music Nima and I make. We just make music. But I guess the difference in definition, like between top and dom or dominant and what's the other one? Top, dom, and
bottom submissive, I guess.
No, not the opposite ones, but top, dom, and what is it, DJ? Master. Yeah. Master, I would say master has the submissive or the other end of that has agreed voluntarily to give up control in everything, like master, like, hey, baby, come get my sandwich. Like that was me being a master or a dom. Or dom is kind of in the middle. Like it can be in bed or out of bed. Top is generally just in bed. There are actually people that do what's called topping from the bottom or being pushy bottoms, which are people who like the other person to service them, but, tell them how to do it. Like, a woman who lies on the bottom and like says, take me. Okay, now do it this way. We got another call here. Can I get it? Or you want to talk more? I cut this guy off twice.
No, I was just basically calling to say you were right and I was wrong. I guess it's just the
I'm sorry.
And us vanillas don't know any better because we never had to ask.
Well, there you go.
I guess that makes Michael the top again.
There I go.
Okay, tune in. I'm going to give some suggestions. Later, thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
Hello. Do we have a fiend caller?
Yeah, it's Dave again. I'm
hey, Dave.
In Minneapolis.
Hey,
yeah.
Dave. Do you want to call?
Dave's not here, man.
Do you want to talk about BDSM?
Sure.
No, what'd you call? What are you calling about,
what'd you really want to talk about?
Sir, what are you called about?
Well, actually, I was going to call in and talk to. I wanted to ask Michael about revolvers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nima might be able to answer your question, too. If Al is back on, one thing I wanted to say, and anybody else who's listening, there's a couple books I'd highly recommend. For information about people new to BDSM who want to know more about it. And I have a list of them. If you go to Anarchy Gumbo Podcast at kittyfeet.com, KittyFeet.com, the interview with Stefan Molyneux, if you look at the top stickied post at the top of that, the comments on that, I have stickied a thread of recommended reading. What do you want to know about revolvers there, Dave?
Well, first of all, let me clear something up. I got no problem with BDSM. I'm actually finishing a hardwood paddle here
Nice. DIY. I like people that make their own sex toys and whipping toys.
I'd love to send you one. I mean, it'd be like, it'd be really, I think a lot of the stuff is like, you know, we, when we're into that scene where like we focus on the details, but a lot of the tools really aren't pretty. You know what I'm saying?
Are you on the Freedom Fiends Fun Forum?
No, not currently. I don't, you know, I don't have time.
I always like handmade stuff, but I don't actually have people send in gifts because I don't make any of my addresses public. But I would love to see a picture of it. I'd love, and I'm honored, and I'd love to see a picture of it. So get on the Freedom Fiends Fun Forum.
I will find a way to make it happen.
Cool, man. Okay? So revolvers. Revolvers are good. I like them. I have a little snub-nose 38. It's a... God, what is it? It's an undercover light. I have to look at it. Charter Arms undercover light 38 special. They cost about $400. It's really light. It's made of aircraft grade titanium. It weighs 15 ounces loaded. It's got 5-shot. That's a good like around the house, around the yard kind of gardening gun when you don't want to strap on something that weighs 3 times as much and is a lot bigger.
Absolutely. I've noticed that every time you're doing something like visual, you've always got a revolver, and I would just want like, what's the thing with the revolver? And I have it too. Like, why, what's the draw? You know what I'm saying?
I went through a revolver phase. I own 3 revolvers. I have that big one that is in almost every scene of the Guns and Weed movie. The big,
Right. I love that film, by the way.
Yeah. That's thanks.
Brilliant.
The big 357 revolver GP101, Ruger 357 Magnum, which is a mother frigger of a gun. And it weighs so much. You could never easily carry
it.
I did carry it one day. I put it on. I carried it concealed. No, I carried it concealed on my hip, but it's still like,
yikes.
Even with a long Hawaiian shirt, it still stuck out like an inch below it. We're going to keep you on after the break here, but sure. Revolvers are good. And I also have a Taurus 357 snubby, which breaks your hand practically to fire it, but it's a good, you know, nightstand gun. It's not something I carry, but it's good because they always go bang when you shoot them. They never malfunction. They're great.
What breaks your hand when you shoot 357 Magnum out of it, but when you shoot 38 Special, it's not so bad, right?
Yeah. And I recommend practicing with 38 in 357 a lot.
Well, can I give you my feedback on that?
Yeah, hang on a second. Let me turn this off and keep recording, and this will go out on the archives.
That's great.
Then we can finish up and get somebody else on when we come back.
Perfect.
But this will be on the archives tonight.
I actually have a Smith & Wesson 640. It's a 357 snubby and, you know, full steel. And the recoil is a lot less than the, you know, aluminum.
Well, things the same. The heavier a gun is physically, the less recoil it's going to have.
Correct. And I'm about 6'2", 250, kind of a power lifter. So, you know, the heaviness and carry doesn't bother me.
Somebody makes a subcompact 15-ounce polymer 357 snubby. I've heard that the kick on that is brutal.
Doesn't sound like fun, you know? But I also have a Smith & Wesson 686, you know, 7-round 357 Magnum. I just love the revolvers. And there's something iconic about revolvers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I felt that when I first got into guns and I bought a bunch of revolvers and didn't really have any semi-autos. I had one that was my first gun, which I sold to NEMA. It was a Smith & Wesson 9mm. What's the brand? What's the model, NEMA?
Are you talking about my gun? Oh, the 910S.
Yeah, 910S, which is discontinued, actually. But
okay.
But I've actually started carrying a Glock 40 cal Model 23. I went through a whole lot of guns and bought and sold and bought and sold and bought and sold. I probably lost $3,000 in selling stuff I'd bought until I got to the Glock Model 23 as my main carry. And sure. Funny thing is, when we first got guns, like 4 years ago, when we first got handguns, like DJ just bought a Glock Model 23 and you put it in her purse. And I went through all these other guns and ended up with the same thing she has. But I also learned a lot about guns, so I don't consider it a loss. You know, if someone wants to know opinion
totally.
If someone wants to know the opinion on a Ruger LCP, I have an opinion now. So
Right. It's a process. You just gotta find the thing that works for you and what you work well with, you know.
I look at it like guitars, you know, like my right. old, a lot of my old friends are musicians who think I'm nuts because I have guns, or some of them are even like, well, I could see having a shotgun in your closet, but why do you carry a gun? Or why, or I could see even carrying a gun, but why do you need 15 different carry guns? And I'm like, how many guitars would you have if you could afford yep. as many as you want? And they're like, oh, exactly. okay. With women, I say exactly. shoes. With men, I say guitars.
Exactly. It's totally where it's at. Like, you got to play around with guns. But there, to me, like, and I see it with you, there's something so iconic about holding a revolver. There's,
yeah. It's, I mean, that cowboy video game's not called Red yeah. Dead Semi-Auto, you know?
Although in Red Dead Revolver, it's a lot better when you get your semi-automatic.
I'll bet. Yeah. There you
right.
go.
Right. Like, the semi-automatic, there's nothing wrong. Like, I've got a Smith & Wesson, you know, M&P 9mm. Great. Nice. I've got a H&K 9mm. Great. I love them. But there's something just so beautiful and elegant and, like, it's almost like it's engineered better about a revolver. Like,
well, you because it's a simple machine, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's holding
the,
that.
The elegance is in the simplicity.
Yes, but they're not simple. They're actually very technical in order to make that thing cam perfectly and, you know, to yeah. make all the springs work just right in order to rotate that thing in one trigger pull. It's an amazing thing, but it's so iconic. I mean, if someone holds a revolver out, it's so much more than that, you know, junky, you know, black 9mm, which, you know, I have nothing against, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, if we lived in a world where it was the culture for everybody to open carry,
we're back.
Revolvers are a lot more beautiful.
We're back. We're back.
We were talking about Lawler here is just talking about how iconic they are. Just the imagery. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. That's it, man. There's something about it. You know, it's that. What is it? Four clicks on a 45 Colt being cocked. There's something about a revolver that's just beautiful and magical that, you know, I'm sorry, Glock and Smith & Wesson, well, with their automatics and whatnot, they'll never be able to match. It's yeah. beautiful.
An interesting thing, too, I was thinking...
You can't play Russian roulette with a Glock, right?
Well, you could if your buddy randomly loaded a snap cap into one of them. Snap cap, yeah, but...
Right,
a
blank. Okay.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking, too, about revolvers. It's interesting, you know... A single action revolver is actually double action, and a double action revolver is actually triple action. Because on a triple action revolver, when you pull the trigger, it's doing three things. It's turning the cylinder, it's pulling right. back the hammer, and releasing the hammer.
Mm. Right. I think of a double action revolver, it's almost like a ballerina. It's doing so many things, and they have to all happen at once.
Guns
so
are beautiful.
Do you open carry?
What's that?
Do you open carry?
I do not open carry. I live in Minnesota. I have a concealed carry permit, and I do concealed carry.
Okay. See, I guess I feel like if we lived in a world where everybody open carried, I'd probably prefer a revolver, just because, like you said, it just speaks to what a gun is and what it was.
I don't know, though, too. I think there's a lot of – we have a lot of romanticism about revolvers, all yeah. three of us. But I think if the Cowboys – could have had a Glock, they would have had a Glock. And I think that, you know, I think if the Minutemen, you know, at Lexington Concord could have had not even like, you know, a modern AR, but if they could have had a Mosin, they think how much quicker they would have won that one, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But that's it. I mean, I have a Mosin and I have an AR and I have a Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm, but I just love the revolvers. Yeah. I mean, I just love the snub-nosed revolver. I mean, I could drop that thing in my pocket. I'll
say this about revolvers too. I really like the long trigger pull, even though I am absolutely safe and I could pick up any gun in the dark and not put my finger on the trigger and hold it correctly. I feel right. a lot more comfortable if I hear a noise in the backyard and I'm kind of sleepy and I run out in the backyard or run out in the garage or something or into the living room. I feel a lot more confident doing that with a revolver in the middle of the night when I'm sleepy than I do with a Glock, because I
yeah,
know
absolutely.
Even if I touch
my
the trigger.
My wife insists that the gun in our nightstand is the revolver. She insists upon it. Because not only that, but because you can create the grip you want on that weapon and point it and be comfortable pointing it.
One thing to consider about revolvers for home defense is, in the dark, the muzzle flash of a revolver is stupefying. It will blind you for about 2 minutes.
Well, you know, that's why they say the best weapon for home defense is a 357 Magnum, because everyone in the room is blind and deaf.
I don't know if that necessarily helps. I think it would help to blind the other guy, but if the other guy's got a hole in him, yeah.
Well, everyone's blind and deaf.
I think what I would grab in a situation like that is knowing the landscape. What, Nima?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking what I would grab in a situation like that is the Mossberg 500. You know, I got all my guns next to my bed, and I guess it depends on how loud the bang is. If it's a knock at the door, I'm probably going to carry the pistol with me, but if I hear somebody breaking in, I'm grabbing the shotgun.
Oh, don't worry. I got an 870 leaned up behind the door.
Exactly.
you sound well prepared.
So I got number 4 buck in that. Yeah, and I got the home defense model, so I got the, 7-round magazine.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
A tube magazine, right?
Yep, that's right. And the AR-15 downstairs, no problem there.
I've kind of got my eye on, if I get enough money, there's a thing called a Saiga. It's like built on a AK-47 platform, but it's a shotgun, semi-automatic.
Oh, that's
and you could put like the
AR-15 type shotgun.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah, but I think it's built on the AK-47 platform, and it's just
you
buy one of the cylindrical magazines. Oh yeah, yeah.
Yep.
That'd be the idea.
That's pure sex appeal, man. You can't beat
yeah.
that.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway,
all right. Any other gun talk for us?
I could talk about guns for hours, man.
I could tell.
I'm a little ticked off at you guys for calling the AR-15 a status gun, man. That's kind
of, why
that irks me, man. Because you know what? I've got a Mosin and I've got an AR-15, and I'll tell you, you know, that AR-15, that is a better gun.
I'm just kind of teasing about that, and you know, a lot of people who are not statists say you need to learn the AR because when the poop hits the fan, there's going to be a lot of them lying on the ground for some reason or another.
Speak for myself, I'm not going to leave mine laying on the ground. I spent a lot of money to get it, and I'm assuming everyone else did too, so they're going to be hard
to come by. I don't think he's
thinking
about people voluntarily leaving
it. I'm talking about like blue-headed dragoons getting shot by sovereign citizens or something.
Oh, no. You know what? Like, people got to get their heads over this stuff. Like, if the government wants to kill you, you're going to be dead.
I'm not saying I recommend it or believe it. I'm saying that's why a lot of people train with ARs, because, I mean, there is a thing of you should be adept in the occupying army's platform. For instance, American soldiers going over to Afghanistan, they're taught a lot with the AR and the M4, but they are also given instruction with an AK. Because they may find one on the ground, you know, and it may, and they're,
you know, and I'll be honest with you, my father fought in Vietnam, and he knows the AR, he knows the AK, he knows them interchangeably. You could blindfold them, tie one hand behind his back, and he'd put both of them together. You know, if you threw the parts in front of him,
yeah,
he's that good.
I guess it's just, to me, what I'm saying is, when I see an AR, I think of goons. I think of, you know, I think of police kicking in grandma's door on the wrong house and shooting her because they think there's a smack dealer next door or something. That's what
But every gun works that way. I mean, like, there's not a gun that you could own that isn't like the part of some overbearing state hurting people.
Oh, I mean, think about the Mosin. I mean, it's cool that it was used.
Yeah,
it's cool that it was used to kill Nazis, but it was also used to kill a lot of Russian peasants who just were getting in the way.
I've got my Mosin. I love my Mosin. It's a great gun. It's accurate as hell. It's a beast. Shoot, I don't know what they were thinking about the recoil on that weapon, but, you know, yeah, let's put a steel butt plate and, you know, make the shooter hurt a little bit, you know?
You know, I feel more comfortable shooting my Mosin than I do my Mossberg. I feel like I can shoot my Mosin all day.
Well, with the shotguns, you got to play around. You can get spring, you know, butt pads so they soak up a lot of recoil. you can goof around with that a lot with the shotgun. The problem with the Mosins is they're just, that's what they are. I was thinking, yeah, like back in the day, like they were having a battle, and by day three, all those guys had black and blue shoulders. I don't know how they were shooting at each other.
Like, yeah. They were, I'm sure, strong, that was the least of their concerns, though.
Strong Russians.
Yeah, I mean, well, not just the Russians. I mean, look at the Mauser 98s. I mean, those are, what, 8mm? Those are, oh, man. Could you imagine that recoil?
I can't. Yeah, I've never shot one, but yeah. More than a Mosin.
My brother-in-law has got one of those Magnum kind of big, you know, deer rifles, and holy cats, man, you pull the trigger and you're done for the day.
We could actually buy like these little strap-on shoulder protectors. I've thought about one of those before, because sometimes when I'm shooting my shotgun, I like take my wife's sweater and I like bunch it up next to my shoulder.
A gun
condom.
And I don't
even feel it, even if it's double-aught Bach. Yeah, well, oh well.
That reminds me of being in high school, and I got thrown out of gym class because I wore my grandmother's knit sweater for my gym. They hated that.
I bet.
But, you know.
Well, cool, man. Yeah, we're going into a break. I'm sorry, I used the break word. We'll be back soon for our last segment of Freedom Fiends Live.
Thanks so much for calling, man. We appreciate it. Worms here. Not final ever, just final for the day. And let's see, we've talked about guns, sex, talked about cats.
Guns, sex, cats, and the government. That's all I think about, man.
So I don't know what we're missing. I guess drugs. We haven't talked about drugs. So give us a call.
Crocodile users. If you're on a crocodile Jenka mixture, what's that, an insane man speedball? Call
a dead
in.
Dead man speedball.
A dead man speedball. We did talk about drugging cats.
Drugging your cat.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's killing two birds with one drone right there.
Killing two militants with one drone.
There you go. So yeah, if you want to call us for our last segment and think of something we missed, I think we've covered it all. You know, drug, sex, cats.
California school district tests GPS tracking for students who skip class.
Yeah, that was pretty horrible. So they're gonna, although in the story they didn't say how they were gonna GPS the kids. Like, are they gonna give them a little ankle bracelet, or what the hell are they gonna do?
I saw an episode of Law and Order where someone had house arrest and had an ankle bracelet, and he just cut it off and put it on his cat.
That's pretty smart. Don't they have alarms though? Like if you tamper with them, like smoke detectors and airplanes, kind of thing?
I imagine anything is tamperable that's physical.
That's true. Yeah, you just got to think smarter than the status, which ain't too hard.
So Isaac asked us why we don't talk more about economic collapse stuff, and I said, everyone else does it so well, and we try to be different and not repetitive of so many other people. But also, I just don't like talking about it.
Why? Does it depress you?
It depresses me, and also, I don't know. I don't really see it happening quickly.
I guess I feel like what's really actionable that hasn't already been said. Protect yourself, you know, get a little bit of preparation, get some gold, some food, and then just wait, because nobody can predict when it's going to happen. Whenever it's obvious that it's going to happen, it's going to be obvious to everybody, not just the Liberty media, you know?
Yep. You know, a long time ago when I finished making the Hubert Selby movie, and I had also, right before that, I made the DIY or Die movie. I'd made two movies that had about 30 people in each one and were really complicated. And then I said, that's it. My next movie is going to have one person and my cats. And
Guns and Weed.
Then we made Guns and Weed, which had about 15 people in it and was really complicated. But the movie I'm making now really is, it's got one guy in it, the Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle DVD. I'm almost done editing it too. I've been editing it for 2 weeks today, and it's at a pretty final, it's past rough cut stage. It's at like, I mean, I still got work to do on a little color correction and cleaning up a couple edits here and there, but it's really close to what the final's going to be.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Just a weekend of shooting and a couple weeks of editing, and bam. movie.
And a couple of weeks of preparation. I mean, Jared and I were on the phone and on the emails sending lists back and forth of what we're going to do and how we're going to do it and expanding it and changing it. And then actually during the shooting, the 3 days he was here, you know, we'd shoot a bunch of stuff. We'd take our master document of lists of things to do and I made a copy of it and we would just delete the stuff we'd already done and then reprint it out and make additional notes in it. So we were writing the script as we were doing it too, after a lot of preparation. Well, preparation's the important part.
Oh yeah, definitely. I was going to say it must be like one of the funnest movies you've ever shot as far as just going out and shooting. But then again, with Guns and Weed, we did that. Plus, we got to go to a pot dispensary. So
and not touch. Just look but not touch. Yeah.
I was tempted though. I was just wishing in my head and daydreaming about just scoop into my pocket. But I know that they probably have cameras and the state monitors.
That'd be unethical. You'd be stealing. What you should have had visions dancing in your head of was like, you know, buying it at Walmart for $4 a pound. Or $4 an ounce even.
Like in the produce section next to the dried chilies and the hibiscus flowers.
Yes.
I just buy it in bulk in a big grocery bag.
You know, the justifications for keeping marijuana illegal, and I would say all drugs, but let's say marijuana because that's the one people think, you know, they think different is they think it's different from other drugs. And in a way it is, but still, if one should be legal, they should all be legal, which is partially the argument for keeping it illegal. But what I was going to say is the logic testing the idea that drugs should be still be illegal, the people who believe that strongly and shout it and keep it illegal, the cracks are so long gone on their facade. I mean, the idea that they can still maintain there's a reason to keep it illegal, it's just insanity. It's insanity. The people, politicians saying, well, we got to keep this illegal because blah, 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 blah.
Exactly. At this point, it's so obvious to everybody, I think, that the only reason is because we said so.
Yeah,
I mean, they can't make any kind of rational or moral argument that anybody can just break apart with just a tiny few seconds of critical thinking. So it's so obvious that it's just because we said so, which I think in a way is good for the liberty movement because it has them show their hand. It's so obvious that the state is just a bunch of guys that make edicts that don't make sense, that don't have our best interest at heart, but is just nothing but their lust for power.
I think Bloomberg outlawing big sodas in New York is doing something for the liberty movement. I mean, Jon Stewart was on TV bitching about it the other day, and he showed a clip of who's that guy that pretends to be libertarian on Fox News? The one that wears a bow tie.
Tucker Carlson?
Yeah, Tucker Carlson.
Does he pretend to be libertarian? I don't see how.
Yeah, he kind of does. He used to. But anyway,
bad at that.
You know, he was complaining about it, and Jon Stewart showed the clip, and then Jon Stewart pretended to cry and said, I can't believe it's come to this. I agree with Tucker Carlson on something.
Yeah. Which obviously, and everybody's been pointing this out, the whole poked is, okay, I could just buy two sodas then. You know, if you're going to limit my ounces.
I was thinking of a secret plan of why they do that is to keep both your hands full so you can draw a gun as quickly.
Nice. Well, I remember how silly stuff like that is. When I just turned 21 and I didn't move to Salt Lake, but I was in Salt Lake for vacation and I ordered a double of whiskey and they said, we can't do that. And I was like, all right, give me two singles of whiskey. And they're like, okay.
It's like 10-round mag. You know, if you get quick enough at changing mags, two 10-round mags isn't that much different than a 20-round mag.
Or carry two guns.
Yeah.
I mean.
Although that's illegal some places. And, you know, most places.
Oh, is it really?
Well, most places with mag restrictions, carrying a gun at all is illegal. But like in California, the few people who are rich and famous enough to actually get a concealed carry permit, it's tied to the serial number of one gun.
Oh my God. Yeah. I think you were telling me that. That just boggles my mind.
Yeah. Whereas with me, it's like, which shoe am I going to put on today? Which gun am I going to take with me?
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know if we
does
were
this
about
gun
it
make me look, does this gun make me look fat? I'll use the other one.
Yeah. I fantasize about the day when I have enough guns to where I can color coordinate them with my outfit.
Yeah. Well, I think all my guns are either black or steel color, so
yeah, I'd like some nice colored revolvers. You know, I could have green to go with my green and brown outfit. And
match your eyes.
Just the gun black when I'm wearing all black, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, match my eyes. Well, we were talking about it during the break, and my wife brought this up once. My wife goes, "How many guns do you need?" And she goes, she stopped herself and she goes, "Wait, I guess that's like you asking me how many shoes I need."
Yeah, and earlier and in the break, I said and recorded me saying, "Well, yeah, I answer that with guys. I say, how many guitars would you want? And with girls, I say shoes." And I was thinking, well, I know a lot of girls that play guitars, and I guess I know a few guys that have a bunch of shoes, rockabilly guys.
Right, rockabilly guys.
Yeah.
So guns good, state bad.
Guns good, state bad. I think that'll be the name of this episode. Guns good, state bad.
Yes. I think guns I had too good, much cat wine.
State bad. What's cat wine?
I guess it's made from cats. No, it's not. It's although it looks like cat pee. It doesn't taste like it though. We've had this bottle of wine that's in a cat shaped bottle for like 3 years now, and we've moved it with us. And my wife was like, We're paring down. We're not going to move everything we own this time. So she was like, drink all the alcohol in the house so we don't have to move the house. And I was like, sounds well,
that's
good to me.
That's a quality problem. You'd have a yard sale. Problem. I remember, you know, we were like the other day, some kids came in our yard and played for a minute and we chased them away like the cranky old people. Get off my lawn. And I was thinking like, we've become really sensitive because in Agora, like people had a yard sale on our lawn without asking us. And then in
without asking you.
Yeah. And then in Echo Park. Yeah. They were Persian too. There were these Persians that like they had a Mercedes Benz that they parked partially on our yard and then it had a flat tire and they didn't fix it for like 3 weeks. So we had
they're Persian rednecks.
Persian rednecks, basically. Yeah. They had a yard sale in our yard I woke up and looked at my window and then I was thinking like, you know, it's gotten better and better. Like that was now is better than then. And that was better than when I lived in Echo Park in LA. One day I came home and there were 15 like angry kids standing in my yard having a McDonald's party. And when they left, there was like a circular pile of McDonald's trash in my yard. Wow. We're out, man.
All right, man. Good cast or good show.
Good cast. Good cast. Freedom Fiends live. Worms, 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 worms. Nima.
Is the music still playing?
Yeah. Say something. All right. We win the prize for least professional live radio show in the last two casts.
But you still want to listen, don't you?
Yeah,
don't
I do. You? I'm going to go edit it. It's good stuff, man.
Any other post game?
Nah, unless you want to, let's go over to the other channel for just a minute.
Okay.